everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I'm here with Dom. Dom, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm very excited because we are back for our second episode of Big Brother Canada coverage of the season. And joining us to get into all of it is the winner of Big Brother 14. It's Ian Terry. Ian, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, always. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Yeah, no, I'm always excited to talk about Big Brother, whether it's the U.S. version or the Canadian version, but none of the other ones.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, before we get into everything, that plenty of people are gonna that are hearing this are going to know Ian, of course, from Big Brother 14, and will have no idea who the two of us, being Dom and I, are. So just very quickly to fill those people in, Dom and I do very regular coverage of both Survivor and Big Brother U.S. and intermittent coverage of Big Brother Canada. And I would just flag up that I think we're probably best known for our former player interviews, where we go through our guest game kind of round by round, whether they are from Survivor or Big Brother or whatever. And you can find all of those interviews at the top right of our blog page. And I think those would be the things that the people that are listening to us for the first time would be most interested in.
Yeah, Ian is among those, incidentally, if you're coming to this through him.
Right, yeah, I would highly recommend, if you're going to start with any of them, Big Brother 14, of course, a great season, and certainly Ian's retrospective that we did with him was very fun and certainly worth a listen. Yeah, so Ian, of course, we are, you know, not to bury the lead, we're back here to talk about Big Brother Canada, and the first time that we did this was we talked about weeks 1 through week 5, and that was just as Andrew was about to get evicted by Canada. But I'm curious, I know you've been watching the season very religiously almost. Anything from the first part that we covered that you want to flag up?
Yeah, you know, there's one thing that Big Brother does every season, and I really always enjoy watching it because it really highlights how certain people just don't understand the idea of, like, strategic reasoning in any way. And that's when they do the Yankee swap veto competition. And this year was no exception, where everybody pretty much botched it completely.
Okay, right, well, right. Quickly, just for the fellow non-Yankees who might be listening to this, what is the Yankee swap?
The Yankees, the one where traditionally there's some sort of crapshoot game where one person with, like, a low score, the lowest score is eliminated each round, selects a prize from a batch of prizes with a pre-selected order. And then anyone that's eliminated in a later round has the option of trading or keeping the prize they have or trading for one of the prizes that have already been revealed.
Right. And we saw, of course, in BB 14, your season, this is the one where you got the dog's life punishment. And I'm curious, right, what and this is the one this season where Allison finished, I think, in 4th place out of 6 and still ended up with the veto. So certainly talk us through why you had such an issue with this.
Well, my problem with it is that well, there's two things that I'd really highlight. Is one, there's just, like, what I would say is player stupidity. We've seen, I think we've had, what, like 7 iterations of this game played out at this point, and we've never seen anybody that finishes lower than 2nd place win the veto, and you pretty much have to bank on winning the competition outright in order to actually keep that veto prize. So if you take the veto any earlier than that, or at least, you know, you don't discuss it in line or deal make or something once you're down to about 2 people, you're going to get it taken away from you. And the prizes that are at the end of the game tend to be, like, some sort of punishment or, like, public humiliation or something like that. So to trade any prize for the veto when you're in, like, 4th, 5th place is a really, really dumb decision typically. And it was here. I mean, she got to keep it, but it definitely wasn't something that I would ever do under any circumstance.
Yeah. If you have people who are actually aware of the ways to play the competition, what do you think is, like, the ideal spot to finish? Because if you finish in, like, 4th or 5th place and you try and go for one of the good prizes on the grounds that, you know, no one's going to care because they'll all be going for the veto, whoever finishes in, like, 2nd or 3rd is going to try and snipe that from you and just let whoever finishes, like, whoever wins the competition, I guess, just take the veto from them.
Obviously, you know, the ideal thing is the more you last, right? When I played it, the way I saw it as the longer that I last in this, the more information I have to do backward induction to figure out how it will play out. So obviously finishing higher is going to give you a better prize. But the way I would do it is you want to have a prize that's desirable, but not too desirable. So, for instance, in this one, there were 3 prizes. Probably the ideal way to play it would be to take, like, a slop pass if you're in, you know, like fourth or fifth place, which ironically ended up being taken by the first place person for some reason. The idea for me, I would say, like, if you're in third or so place, you want to get, like, there's almost always a veto ticket in the U.S. version. Like, that's the ideal prize to hold on to, because no one's going to take that in pro of a trip to Hawaii or something.
Right, yeah, we saw, I remember when we talked to you during your own retrospective, when you were faced with your decision, the veto ticket was out there. You ended up taking the dog's life, but I certainly understand the rationale for that. Where...
Yeah, it's basically that you would look at whichever players are left, know what prize you feel is most desirable to them, and then you want to hold on to at least second most valuable to that person, because that would not be taken. They would take the other thing.
Right. The example that springs to mind for me is BB9, where there was a motorcycle and $10,000 out there. And I feel like taking the motorcycle is basically locking in a motorcycle that is worth more than $10,000.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I find it very odd that that was the way that played out, especially because, you know, you can actually, maybe they weren't aware, you cash value of the prize.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah. Just because you win a motorcycle doesn't mean you actually have to, like, carry a motorcycle off of Radford. Like, you can take the cash value if you want. So that was sort of an odd example to me. But in that case, I mean, it's Big Brother 9. How much are they thinking?
Right. Very fair. But so let me ask you then, and if this is also the case when Memphis won the car at the beginning of Big Brother 10, can he just take the cash for that instead?
Well, actually, that's a very interesting situation, because I know there are a lot of newspaper articles about this. Both of the cars were rentals from a museum at the time, and they apparently owned neither of the cars to give away. So if he actually wanted the car, they would have to go and actually buy it. And instead, they offered him, I think it was like $25,000 cash. Instead, and he would have to pay taxes on the car prize anyway. And on top of that, apparently his reasoning was the gas mileage was so bad that it was just not worth it to him. And on top of that, they had painted the car a different color by that point in time.
Okay.
So yeah.
Very interesting stuff. Yeah.
I think he took $25,000 cash buyout for it.
Not bad for the first HOH competition.
Yeah, I mean, not even an HOH competition, just some random food comp, I think it was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Jerry was already the HOH, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, at that point, he's already making more than everyone except the two finalists is going to make from the season.
Right, yeah, no, exactly. That's a very good point.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into some Big Brother Canada now. We, of course, have so much to talk about. And I think the place that we want to start is, you know, we left off our first Big Brother Canada podcast as Canada was the HOH. Andrew was the inevitable evictee. And Ian, I think the place to start is hearing, you know, Dom and I talked about this last time, but what are your thoughts about Canada being granted the power of HOH within the game?
I mean, personally, I really don't like to see things like this. I would like to just say, you know, put 15 people in there, throw away the key and just let them play it out. But at the same time, given some of the things we've seen over the years, this is certainly not, you know, peak unfairness, if you will. Fair is such a concept that we can even use in Big Brother. But I'd rather it be this than, say, like some random veto that's voted upon by the public where only the two nominees can get it and it's brought up, you know, the Wednesday before the live eviction show.
Right. Yeah. So, and this is something I know I was very critical of this the last time that we talked about it. And I know I also at the same time brought up the idea that Big Brother Canada is not Big Brother US, and they do really take ideas from more international versions where the viewing and voting public are really the people, the major players. Like I know, Ian, you know that in international versions, in many of them, it all just comes down to viewer popularity. And I really don't have a problem with that. The problem I found with it was that it was that this mechanism was what was cracking open the first five. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, I definitely can see where the problem with that is. I liked the baseball analogy where if it's a perfect game, the first hit has to be completely clean, no question. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, yeah, it cracked open the first five. It was one HOH win away from that being over and done with anyway. I mean, it's so fragile that, I mean, was it going to hold up? Probably not. I mean, you're going to see someone like John or Heather or Netta win it at some point. So I feel like at that point, it's really not even that big of a deal. Like you said, the big difference is that Andrew doesn't get to jury. So that's my thought on it.
Right. And Dom definitely brought up a fair point last time we talked about this, which was that Andrew was, a walking dead man as it was. Like, there was no chance, unless he ran the table from end to end in competitions, that he was actually going to win. So maybe Andrew getting evicted by Canada was the best case scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, it pretty much was. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, and that's a very good point that I made, I think. I guess the question that follows on from that is, what's the cap on the level of involvement from the viewing audience that you're happy with? Because clearly, if it devolves into something like Big Brother UK or something like that, where it's all coming down to, you know, phone polls of the viewers and the actual contestants become, you know, players on the sidelines, that's clearly not an acceptable outcome for people. No. if you're interested in the game. But where do you draw that line if you were a producer here?
I mean, here's the thing. I can deal with, like, one or two of these types of things per season, pre-planned, okay? It has to be decided, like, week negative two that, okay, week five, the viewers are going to be the head of household, and, you know, week 10, someone gets voted immunity, or not week 10, but, like, week two, someone gets voted immunity or something like that. Pre-planned a couple times a season, and that's it. I don't want it to devolve into the UK version where, you know, you have 14-year-old girls on their phone voting whoever the latest teeny bopper crush sensation is to win the show. That doesn't interest me in any way.
Right, and I would say, for me at least, that when this, as this becomes a bigger and bigger part of BBUS, that sits far less well with me than it does when it's part of BB Canada, where it's been there since the inception.
And I would definitely agree with you. I feel like, I get it. Like, Big Brother Canada has made it very clear that it is sort of like a blend of the international ones and the U.S. version, so I'm more okay with seeing it there.
Yeah. In particular, what's your take on Canada having a jury vote this season? Because it seems like this is something which could very easily become the standard thing for Big Brother Canada seasons.
I don't particularly mind it. But I will say this. I would have much rather it been a situation where instead of Sarah and Kenny or Kenny not going to jury for that seventh vote, I would have much preferred it to have been and Kenny do go to jury and then Canada gets a ninth vote. I would have rather Canada had 1/9 of the power rather than 1/7.
And is that just based on the two people who happen to fall victim to that? Or do you think in general it's better to have a larger jury so that Canada's vote has less impact?
Just because of the general idea that the larger jury would mean it's only 1/9 the power as opposed to 1/7.
Yeah, although it is kind of self-defeating at that point, right? Because if you're going to give them a vote, you want it to actually represent something meaningful.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, I really don't like the idea. I sort of think it's okay. Like, here's the thing. I'd rather it not be there. Like, I'll be very honest. Like, I would rather it just be seven people, send Kenny there, Canada doesn't get a vote. But I will say, like, I'm okay with it, but if it's going to be there, I'd rather it have less power.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with it as long as all the contestants know about it well in advance. Like, if they just spring this on them at the last minute, then I'm really not okay with that. I think, you know, by the time
they should know.
Yeah.
Because they know Arlie was the first one there.
Yeah, so. I mean, they should be able to figure out that Canada is involved in some way, but as long as it's flagged up in advance, I think I like it because it creates this interesting metagame where you have to consider not only how people are perceived in the house and on the jury by the other contestants, but also by the wider viewing public, which is obviously something which is much harder and is going to cause a lot more paranoia. So it's going to create this interesting question maybe where if you win the final HOH and you're deciding who to take with you, you might think, well, this person is marginally less popular amongst the house guests, but maybe they've received a better edit or they're just the type of person that the audience might respond to better, so they might have Canada's vote locked up.
Yeah, and it's a very good point. And we have seen many seasons where it is 4-3, so this could definitely make a big difference.
Yeah, I feel like I can say I like it here at the moment, but once we get down to a scenario where it actually ends up determining the winner, I'm going to wish that it just never was in place.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the way I think of it, because if that is indeed the case, we've had at this point two straight winners of two on the show where the seventh jury vote that ends up deciding it is something abnormal, and I really don't care for that much.
Yeah, and kind of like what you guys said, I really, when it comes down to it being Big Brother Canada, I don't have a problem with that. When since the inception, it's been part of the game. Like, Canada is going to have an impact on how this plays out, and every contestant on there should be, or at least would be, smart to anticipate that.
Right. I mean, yeah, you have to play to the public in this version.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
And you probably should in the American version too at this point.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Definitely. So I think as we transition from that, let's get into some, you know, we like to give our parting thoughts on the people that have left. Parting thoughts on Andrew. And I know Dom and I touched on this quite a bit as we were talking, because Andrew leaving was just basically a foregone conclusion the last time that we spoke. But Ian, very curious to hear your thoughts about how Andrew did this season.
I mean, Andrew's game wasn't really anything to write home about. I mean, he goes in there as some huge guy that, spoiler alert, don't get drunk on the first night and be loud. That's just a really bad idea. You know,
no one has ever done that, so don't worry.
No one has ever done that of any of the three of us. But, I mean, you know, it's not typically a good idea. He went in with a huge target, especially being, you know, a physically strong-looking Vin Diesel, Caillou, what have you. And, you know, he gets nominated in the first week. If he doesn't win the veto there, he is gone. I'm assuming that they're going to boot him for a Nick. I don't think that the first five had enough votes where they could control that outcome. So that's not really too much of an issue. But at the same point in time, he was doing pretty decent, but he was never going to win. So, yeah, that's it.
What do you make of the comparisons between him and Tom Plant from BB Can 1?
Pretty much perfect. Same scenario, right? Has to win the veto to stay the first round. Strong physical male that was very aggressive, very forthright in what he was doing, had to win every competition, was never going to win the game, but could get to the jury had Canada not screwed them over.
Right. And I'm curious, because this is something that I brought up before, which is it rang false to me, or at least was very unsatisfying, that Canada was the one to get the first crack at the first five and take out Andrew by extension. Did you feel like that twist was always going to punish the most, like, over-the-top aggressive player?
Yeah, because the audience is going to react. Whoever is probably most aggressive is being seen as a bully, you know, to them. So that might be the case. But, I mean, I can think of other seasons where the most over-the-top aggressive player is quite popular and probably would not fall victim to this twist.
Okay, Dom.
At least with an American audience.
Sure. Dom, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Andrew, yeah, I don't think he comes across as the type that people are going to root for. It's interesting because a lot of the audience seem to have this mentality where automatically they're going to root for the underdog. And the problem with that is people's status as the underdog can change very quickly. And it's almost like as soon as they become the underdog, they're not the underdog anymore because they assume this position of power. So, you know, is Sabrina the underdog now when she wasn't 2 or 3 weeks ago? You can't really look at people through that lens, I don't think. And Andrew, in particular, I think he came across as very, you know, boorish and unpleasant at times. And I think the way he left the house was kind of classless in a way. And I haven't kept up with, you know, the interviews he's done after that. So maybe he is different in real life, but I can understand why people didn't like him. As for his impact on the game, it's weird because, as Ian said, his game itself wasn't that impressive. And he didn't really have that much influence outside of his own very narrow circle. But I think being tied to him was what doomed a lot of the more capable players, because Kenny, for instance, is someone who I think clearly has some measure of talent for the game, but because he spent so much time with Andrew and didn't develop any close relationships with people outside of the first five, when like Heather seemingly comes out of nowhere to win an HOH, he's just not well placed to ensure his safety there because he doesn't have that kind of backstory with her. And you know, so Kenny's too close to Andrew, and now Sarah's too close to Kenny. And so Andrew, despite not actually really doing much, he sets off this cascading effect where he just takes down everyone who ends up in an alliance with him.
Yeah, it is very interesting. And I'm sure we're going to be getting into plenty more of that later, because it really did seem like once Canada cracked open the first five, Arlie was ready to bail. John was ready to, you know, start headhunting, and it really did seem like a snowballing effect.
I mean, that's the thing in Big Brother. I guess that is the other argument to, you know, why you don't want Canada to get the first crack at it, is because there's, in Big Brother, there seems to be sort of momentum. I mean, I hate to say that past events will affect future events that may not necessarily be related, such as the outcome of an HOH competition or something like that. But I will say that we have seen it historically where, yeah, once the coup d'etat happens, or coup d'Jeff, rather, in Big Brother 11, I mean, it pretty much just goes completely downhill for that alliance.
Right, right. And I think that absolutely is the case here, where once the first five gets cracked open and then Arlie's ready to bail and people are starting to become aware of it, it really does seem like the house shifted very clearly against those first five in what may not have been the case. Like, that may not have happened, at least not this early, without Canada's HOH.
Correct.
Yeah, so let's move on now here, because after Andrew goes, Kenny is now quite clearly public enemy number one in the house, and maybe this speaks to the idea we were just talking about, where I'm not even sure that if Andrew had gone under conventional circumstances, Kenny would have necessarily had his neck on the line this quickly, but nonetheless, that is in fact the case. And just for a quick refresher for regular listeners, they will already know this, Dom and I did a Big Brother Canada draft after Ika got booted, I believe, and Dom's first two picks were Sarah and Kenny, and this is going to be a bad week for Team Dom.
Yeah, this was I've had better weeks, to be honest. Like, it's I had them right at the top of my draft board, and I just snapped them out very quickly. I thought you were insane for taking John, and now John is here in this great position of power, and Kenny and Sarah are kind of watching it from their couches at home. So, yeah, maybe my judgment was off on that one.
Right, actually, this is something that I meant to ask you about, Ian, and I'll ask. Yeah. I suppose I'll ask you now. It's got to be weird, right? The idea of, because in Survivor, you go out, you all play, and then the game ends, and then you go home, and a few months later, you all watch your season. And for you, when you were playing in BB14, once you make it past the jury phase, you're going to go home and watch that season after it's all been said and done. It's got to be weird when you're in the Big Brother house and you get eliminated pre-jury, and then you go home and watch the rest of your season play out.
I mean, yeah, I really, obviously it was something that crossed my mind pretty frequently when I was in there, especially early on, where I was kind of like, do I really want to be here or do I want to be watching it? And I mean, I couldn't imagine how odd it would be to watch something you were a part of unfold live.
Right. It just seems like the strangest idea ever where, David Gerton goes home and watches after 2 weeks of inside the BB15 house and then watches something he had very little part in actually play out, but he was at least there, and it's got to be the weirdest
sensation. No, I would imagine it would be very strange. I mean, it's even weird watching like Big Brother 15 and just thinking like, oh, I stood at that exact spot once, and it's very odd.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get on to let's move on a little bit, and this is this next HOH that we encounter is the first eliminator quiz of the season so far, and this is the one that Heather wins. But I think more importantly here, this is the part where John really declares his loyalty to what's now become known as the Sloppy Seconds, as opposed to, he was very cool with Andrew and Kenny while they were in power and so forth. But I thought this was very interesting. What did you make of John's position here? And I, of course, me being the advocate for throwing that I am, do you feel like John was incorrect in even just buzzing in at any point in this competition?
Well, I mean, I certainly would say that you would like to buzz in, at least in that particular game, to get rid of the people that you would rather not see be HOH. But I mean, he would have been better suited to do it covertly. But I was, sort of okay. If you take one person out, it's just, you can always just say, oh, I spaced out, so I didn't remember they were up there, or something like that. I don't remember how it played out exactly, but if you do it once, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, it just seemed like John, I think he answered like two or three correctly and then was eliminating. Yeah. Okay. Nonetheless, Heather wins this competition. She's the new HOH. And Kenny is now clearly, once again, public enemy number one.
And not a good spot. And actually, if I could say something about this particular competition, as far as like a production standpoint, I think that whenever we have these rather boring or, say, dry type quizzes, I think that, these are obviously not exciting competitions as far as like, set design, anything like that. So the payoff when, as a viewer for me, is that we know who the HOH is like before the episode even ends. So when I see the quiz booth, it's like, yeah, this is probably going to be not too exciting, but we at least know. And the thing is, yeah, it's this endurance comp with this huge, sad, elaborate thing. Yeah, we're not going to know, but hey, it's at least really cool. So if you do a quiz, please finish it in the episode.
Yeah, I actually have a bigger complaint about this, because it seemed like they had agreed upon this policy of completing the question once somebody had buzzed in, which meant that you could buzz in as soon as Arisa started asking the question. You knew that she would just read the rest of it out, and so you could think of the answer and give it. And that seemed like a very obvious loophole that it didn't seem like people picked up on. Now, obviously, if you buzz in and for whatever reason she doesn't read it out, then you've just kind of screwed yourself. But yeah, you would think that that's something they would pay attention to.
I actually also noticed that, so I'm really glad you brought it up. And the question should probably be stopped as soon as you buzz in. Yeah.
Right. I totally concur. And the other thing for me about this competition, if I'm not mistaken, I feel like as the first five people, which became, you know, after Canada's HOH ran, the unpopular people were getting eliminated, you could hear the audience applauding. And I don't know if they could hear that in the house, but I still, and this will come up again, I'm sure, down the line, I'm always an advocate for the audience is not there to make any kind of noise during competitions.
I would agree. I mean, here's the thing. I'm okay with, like, cheering after it ends, whatever, but during such a competition, I really not too happy about that.
Yeah. Right. What I mean is when Kenny gets eliminated and everyone starts going nuts, that's no good if that could potentially get piped in.
Yeah. Ian, remind me, the live HOH you won at Final Six, I think it was, could you hear the audience's reaction to that? Cause...
Oh, the veto? Yeah, I mean, as soon as there was a little bit of a delay. But as soon as I even got close, like, I could hear the audience going, like, ooh, like, you know, ooh, ah. And then as soon as I pulled it out, like, I just heard it, or I hit the button, I heard it go nuts. Like, it was just pretty much like a straight 15 seconds of loud cheering. And even whenever we did the veto at Final Nine, when I was HOH, as soon as I heard Julie say, and Frank has found the second Shamrock, I heard the crowd boo very audibly. And he seemed to say, I remember he was like, no, they were cheering, because I'm sure there was probably some PA that was like, no, you can't boo, please cheer whoever wins, you know. But I do remember hearing a very audible boo when he was doing well.
Yeah, and were you able to, I know we discussed this with you during our interview, but I think it's worth reprising it now. Were you able to infer anything from that? Like, the fact that the audience seems to enjoy the outcome, was that a sign to you in the moment that you would have gone home if you hadn't won that?
Well, no, because being, you know, the egomaniac that I am, I actually took it as the first sign that I was not hated on the outside, because for me, at least, my line of thought was I knew I wasn't particularly well-liked within the house. So I would imagine, well, if the people in here don't particularly like me, then the viewers would probably maybe not like me as well. But when I heard that, I was like, oh, maybe I'm not, you know, disliked. Maybe the people are actually, you know, behind whatever I'm trying to win here and would be rooting for me. But I don't know. I just thought it was just sort of a sense of excitement. Didn't think too much into it. Probably should have.
Yeah. And I like at the end of that Shark veto that you hit the buzzer like five times
I always just thought, like, if I had won the other one, I would have made it a point to just do that. I really just always wanted to do that.
Yeah, the downside is that when you won the HOH on the tiebreaker, you weren't happy about it, so you couldn't throw the card like Evil Dick or Kaser style.
Right, and that was the thing that was, I mean, that was probably one of the more infuriating things for me was, I mean, come on, 1,000? I mean, 1,220 minutes? What the, man. I don't know. I should have just put 1 billion. Well, no, I won't say that.
Okay. Yeah, the problem with putting 1 billion is, and I've had, like, this daydream where I'm trying to throw a competition, and then production calls me out. Yes, exactly.
And Julie says, well, since 1 billion seconds is obviously way over, that was why I tried to low.
Yeah, I've definitely had, oh, Colin, what's your answer again? Like, fuck off, it's 1 million.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. So actually, I think the next thing worth getting into is, Kenny now comes out that he's gay to the rest of the house, and I'm curious as to, because it seemed like somewhat natural timing, but I there's been speculation perhaps that Kenny was doing this because now that he's aware that Canada has the perception, or that Canada has like major influence over the house, that he's doing this to garner goodwill. I'm curious what either of you guys think about that.
You know, good move. I thought it was, you know, certainly something that was endearing. I think he played it at the right time. I think it was definitely something that was smart. I think Sarah, you know, it locked her in for him for pretty much for good at that point. Like, it was, you know, Mumsy and Kenny at that point. Like, there was no chance of her ever wavering from then on.
Yeah, and Dom, I know you're always the skeptic. Did you feel like this was just a play to get Canada on his good side?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think at that point he realized the writing was kind of on the wall for him, and he just wanted to see how they would react to it. And I actually enjoyed it as a moment because there wasn't any kind of emotional theatrics to it. It was just like, hey, fuck it, I'm gay. you could see how startled they were. That was good. By the way, Mumsy might be the worst nickname since like the big X class of nicknames that seem to have sprung out. Can we let's just shy away from that?
I really don't like it, but that seems to be what she is going by on Twitter at this point. So
is she like at Mumsy BB Can or something?
It's definitely not the ideal.
Yeah, absolutely not. Okay, so let's talk, I think, a bit about Heather's nominations now. Of course, as we've mentioned, Kenny is public enemy number one. Is there any idea of not going for Kenny here? Because we see her put Kenny and Allison up. But does she really even have a choice here?
No. I mean, it's pretty clearly it has to be him. I mean, I don't see any other option at this point in time who you would be trying to get rid of.
Right. And I suppose by extension, the question is, are you better off trying to backdoor him?
Yes. I feel like at that point, that's definitely what you would like to do. But at the same time, you know, it's Heather. I mean, if she tries to go for Kenny and, you know, he wins the veto and he pulls the HOH out of his belt back to back, I can almost assure you that's not who he's going to be going after.
Yeah, definitely. Dom, thoughts on this? Because it seems like I don't know what the house knew about Adele's power, but I think by this point, given the initial lie that he told them, his veto ticket would have expired, you know, his fake one would have at this point become his actual power that he had. So it seems like ideas for backdooring Kenny are certainly not only to get Kenny out, but to get Adele to burn that power are certainly plentiful.
Yeah, I think the move itself is pretty obvious. The more interesting part, I think, is going back to what we said earlier about the effect that Canada taking out Andrew has rather than one of the house guests doing that. I think Kenny expected that if somebody did win and make a move against the first five, that Andrew would be the first target for that and he would have some time to regroup. When it's Canada making that hit instead, it's almost like he doesn't quite know how to respond.
That's actually a good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah, sorry. It is very interesting in Kenny's position where, you know, you watch ostensibly your closest ally go out, because I feel like he didn't really grow as close as he eventually did to Sarah until Andrew was gone. I still feel like, you know, they viewed themselves as partners in crime up through the point that Andrew walked out of the house. So it is certainly a tough balance to draw.
Right, because if instead, let's say, Nedda had won HOH the previous week and nominated Andrew and Kenny or something, at that point, Kenny's guard is up and he knows he has to play his way out of it, or at least try to. When Canada does that, he can maybe try and convince himself that that's like an aberration. Canada might view Andrew in that certain way, but obviously Kenny doesn't view him in that way because he's been his closest friend in the house, and there's no indication to him that the whole house shares that view as well.
Right, and that's the thing, is when Canada is the one that gets to crack open the first five, Kenny, I know we pointed this out last time, Kenny had that confessional in the diary room about how we know how we are all perceiving ourselves and each other, but we don't know how the viewing and by extension voting public is perceiving us.
Yeah, also, in a season where you have to be pretty convinced that Canada is getting, if not a jury vote, then at least some other chance to influence the game, when you know that Canada is targeting Andrew and Sabrina, it's like that has to really play into your considerations down the road. And I know Heather had a conversation with Nedda where she said, I considered putting Sabrina up, and this was a few weeks down the road, just because I knew that Canada didn't like her. And part of that was she just wanted to go along with what the country wanted, but it's also, it makes sense strategically as well, because if you know that Canada's getting a jury vote, then if you can be the one doing Canada's dirty work, then they're going to presumably reward you for that.
Oh, no, I agree completely. At this point in either BB, Big Brother Canada, like, I'm going to try to get rid of somebody that's fairly popular, or at least get somebody else to try to do that so I don't get the backlash for it. But, you know, if you get, you know, if you got Big Jeff in there and you have a feeling a coup d'etat is coming out, you know, might want to see him go.
Right. That's like the line that you have to toe, basically, is you want to get, you know, you don't want to go out of your way so early to take out someone you know who you know to be so popular. But at the same time, you can't realistically want to let them stay in to the point that their popularity is going to start dictating the game.
Correct. And, you know, likewise for the other, the opposite of that is, you know, you want to see, you have to, if you take out that person that's unpopular, that's great. Keeping them in, I mean, obviously, that's obviously one person that's less likely to benefit from what, I mean, obviously, in this situation, if you know Sabrina's very unpopular and you know Canada's getting a jury vote, like, you should, at least in my mind, I'm thinking sit next to her at the final two, always, like,
right,
you know, or you know, almost always, anyway. I mean, it's just a bank, I mean, done.
Right, in a perfect world, at least, you would be sitting next right. to the person that you know, right.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. It is very interesting, and I think this is something, you know, in the BB8 era forward, whatever magical line got drawn in the sand between BB7 and BB8, it seems like from that point forward, things have been a little bit different. It certainly has to play a major role in how you act within the game. It being, right. you know, viewer popularity. Right. Okay.
No, absolutely.
Okay. So Kenny and Allison are up on the block. Kenny's basically playing Power Veto for his life within the game, and he manages to take it down with the Technotronics spelling competition. And it was interesting here. I know Brian Lynch pointed out that Heather misspelled wishful yes. with two L's and had a Y it's on her board.
On the board.
Yeah, yeah, and could have gone for wishfully. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was gonna point that out, and I noticed that as soon as it happened. It's just that was it. That was one letter away. And, you know, it's actually the same point could be said of Big Brother 11. I think if Jeff had removed, like, one letter, Technotronics, because it wasn't even complete Technotronics, became Tectonics and actually wins that competition.
Oh, I never even thought about that, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other competition where you can so easily just despair for humanity. Like, it's just so depressing watching it every single time.
Yeah, it's like when Russell in BB11 can win it with Shotgun, that does not speak well for the modern Big Brother casting.
Yeah, and the other thing I was going to say is it seems like we went through like a very, like almost like a peak around 12 and 13 where in order to win that game, you had to have like a 13-letter word, 14 to skip that game entirely, much to my chagrin. And then 15, we see Delivery win it. And now we have, what was it, like some 7 letters.
Shocking. 8 letters, I guess.
Yeah. Or was it shocking? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it seems like we've regressed a bit. If you are throwing that competition, your best bet is to pick some very long word and misspell it rather than go for, you know, sit or something or the hat, you know.
Right, yeah. Right.
I guess if we want to get into that in a bit more detail just very quickly, is there some rule that they follow, like some algorithm where they determine how frequent the towers are? Like, do they follow some kind of Scrabble-like thing, or is it just, you know, we have some A's, we have some X's, whatever, just throw them in there?
That's actually one of the reasons that I was disappointed that game did not come up during 14, because it seemed to me, at least, that Allison's problem was that she could not find any vowels, which is either just, like, this very odd, you know, coincidentally, she just could not find a vowel for whatever reason, or that they just intentionally made very, very few vowels be in the actual letter sets that they were there. So I actually don't think it's based on like a Scrabble distribution at all.
No, I don't think so either. I think it was they intentionally put very few vowels out there so that the coveted vowels you did find were meaningful.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so let's talk about, you know, Kenny wins this POV with shocking, and it was a very shocking result, of course. And now Sarah is going to go up here as the replacement nominee. And I'm curious how much you feel like Sarah, after the first five has begun to be disassembled and is clearly public enemy number one as far as the rest of the house is concerned, was Sarah, too loyal to Kenny here? And is that why she went up?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it doesn't help when Kenny is, like, going upstairs pleading not – please don't put up Sarah when, you know, he knows that he was the target. And ostensibly anything to take a strike against him would be what would happen. So – I mean, I would almost say it was pretty bad play on Kenny's part.
Yeah, because it seems like one of the reasons I was so high on Sarah when we did the draft was I assumed even if the first five did get broken up, she would have one, at least two, you know, further weeks of someone else in it being taken out before her to maybe regroup and try and make something happen. But now, you know, Kenny wins a timely POV and Andrew goes out in these weird circumstances. And, like, she somehow is the first one from that group who ends up getting kicked out at the hands of one of the house guests.
Right. I mean, to me was so odd, because whenever I heard she was, I think, either, you know, first or second pick, you got her on the turn, whatever. The second or third pick?
Yeah, yep. She was one of my first round picks. Yeah.
Yeah. So that to me was, it was very odd, because I heard that. I was like, yeah, you know, Sarah was like the obvious pick, completely nailed it. I was shocked Colin didn't go for her first. I mean, it just seemed like, I said, I think it was on Twitter or something a few weeks ago, maybe it was to Colin, that if this game devolves into BB6, she's Maggie. Like, there was no doubt about that. And she was in a spot to go very far, but it just, the way the competitions played out just didn't work.
Yeah, what did you make of her in general then throughout the season? Because the type of game that someone like Sarah is going to play to be successful isn't going to be a very flashy one. It's going to be much more low-key, just being like the mother figure of the house, which it seemed like everyone did indeed view her as. And I would have thought that would give her more currency when it came to saving herself, but that didn't turn out to be true.
Yeah, no, that game is never going to be flashy. You're going to expect maybe to win a couple competitions, but not a whole lot of them. And you really have to bank on those competitions that you're ostensibly not winning, going in such a way that the targets that are in front of you don't get their hands on them, so that you end up just going in some unfortunate manner.
Yeah. And by the way, we said Heather wins as HOH as if it was just like a throwaway thing. But before this point, Heather really wasn't on anyone's radar. I know you and I were both big fans of her, but didn't really have great expectations for her as a game player. But then she comes out, but then she just randomly wins this competition and handles her HOH week in a surprisingly mature and pointed way.
Well, actually, that's a very interesting point. Whenever y'all did the draft, and I think, was Heather a default? Or no, she wasn't quite a default, but she was taken very late, correct?
I got Heather in the last round, I think, as a default, yeah.
Yeah, to me, that was like, if Sabrina or Rochelle went before her, I remember thinking at that point in time that that was like almost criminal. Like,
blame Colin for that.
At that point, to me, Heather had already been through what I would say are like her trying weeks, right? Where she's, you know, constantly nominated. And, you know, it seems to be you want to play from behind. And she was in that position that I would call behind. And she wasn't evicted. So she seemed to be in an okay spot. And at that point, when you were doing the draft, like, to me, yeah, you could say Netta was perceptive. But what differentiates Netta from Heather at that point in time? Because they both seem to be just bumblefucking around.
Sure. Right. And how has your perception of Heather evolved then? Because you were a big fan of her before for maybe aesthetic reasons, but now she's actually, you know, giving herself some credentials as a game player.
Well, it wasn't even aesthetic. Like I said, I think there were very viable reasons why she would be, you know, certainly someone that wouldn't be defaulted. I mean, not just because she's hot, right? I mean, like, there's certainly a reason why I could see her at least doing well in the game. And if we were to have a must-win draft right now, she'd probably be in my top two or three, if not top two.
That's interesting, because I think my worry with Heather is that she can make it to the end or at least go very far, but I struggle to see her beating Netta. She doesn't beat John, which isn't a mark against her, because I don't think anyone could really beat John, except maybe Netta, which is just the same problem.
I think Netta would beat John, actually, at this point. But...
yeah, but that's the same problem, effectively, for Heather. And then...
I guess we're probably going to get into that later.
Yeah, although I think it's worth flagging it up now, just while we're on the topic, because...
Well, I think my reasoning here is that if Heather is, you know, she's at the end, one of the things that would happen is that ostensibly it's because she was the last target of the John Netta grouping if things go sour for them, right? She's certainly not going to be the first pick to go in that situation. So if she's there, she could be against someone that was not in that core alliance. And she does have some respect that she could beat, you know, your Rochelle, Sabrina, I mean, Allison, and I think even Adele, I would say, lock it in, because I don't think Adele, from what I've been reading, has the respect of anybody in the game.
That's interesting, because if she can beat Adele, then she actually has a very clear path to the finals if she can make that happen. But if she can only beat Rochelle, Sabrina, which I think maybe might be more likely, then she's going to have to do a lot of work to get herself there with one of them without making herself hated by her alliance in the process.
Right, and the beauty of it is, I don't think that she's going to be in a position where if she gets to the end, she's doing it in a way that makes herself hated. I don't see a string of like 3 HOH and just tanking, you know, Netta, Adele, John. I don't see that happening.
Although that would be incredibly fun to watch.
It would be hilarious, but I'm not expecting it.
Yeah, I think what Heather, and again, as Ian mentioned, we'll be talking more about this down the line. I think with Heather, it's a lot of, she's probably not going to be anyone's target. She's probably not going to be a replacement nominee anytime soon, where everyone's just kind of comfortable with having Heather in the house. And it remains to be seen what Heather's able to do with that kind of leverage. But it's certainly, I think people are underestimating her.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt about it.
Yeah. So I think before we move on, let's get into our parting thoughts on Sarah. We see Mumsy go out here instead of Kenny. And Sarah was someone that Dom and I flagged up in our first Big Brother Canada podcast when Dom was making his draft picks after I had picked John first overall. He then went with Kenny and Sarah. And I defended, I said Kenny was a terrible high pick. But Sarah very much was not, and that Sarah very much had potential for the game. And I'm very curious to hear, Ian, I know I said last time that Sarah is absolutely a good player at this game. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree strongly. It seems like she has all of the good qualities of Nicole Nilsson without the bad.
I like it. Yeah. I like it, yeah. All right, so let's get in. Sarah goes out. Let's get into this now. It's a double eviction tonight. And we play yet another eliminator quiz game. And so it comes down to Netta and Arlie. And this is where we saw in the episode following that Netta whispered to Arlie before they were, about to answer the final question, that Netta herself really did not want to win that HOH. But when the question is read, Arlie pauses and then buzzes in with what he knows to be the incorrect answer. And I thought this was a very tough spot, honestly, in Arlie's position here, where once Netta says, "I don't want it," and Arlie obviously knows he doesn't want it. What's the play here?
If neither of y'all want it, I'm sorry, what was the actual competition again? I forget exactly what it was.
It was the one where two people go up, whoever gets it right.
Oh, right. Yeah. The face-off game. At that point, it's, pretty much who can buzz in and ring in, answer incorrectly first.
That was my thought as well, is this is a race to see who can buzz in incorrectly.
Yeah, and strong echoes of the whole thing with Andrew and Alec in the first season here.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. And it seems that this is more common than... I remember, at least in Big Brother 14, I remember Frank saying that he had hoped that it was just me against him in the last round so that he could buzz me and just give it to me, whereas I, although I didn't say it, have the same exact plan in mind. And I definitely remember, I believe, reading it... not sure where, it must have been Sucks or one of the forums, where someone said that if, Dan was like, he looked like a dead mule up there, like he wasn't even thinking about hitting any button at any point, and Boogie just buzzing in pretty much immediately before any lyrics were said, and I think someone said something like, yeah, if you have the two people that have won this, like, not interested in hitting a button at all or completely ringing incorrectly and throwing it, what does that tell you?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And this is certainly something, it seems like this competition in more often than not, I would say, would eventually get down to two people, both of whom know that they're totally safe if the other person wins it. And neither of them then at that point wants to win it.
Right. And the only example that I can think of where that's not the case is Big Brother 12, where I believe it was against Lane. I believe Rachel had to beat Lane in order to secure safety.
That was an incredible competition.
That was actually great viewing. Yeah, I believe she was up there every other round.
Yeah,
and I believe that was like Lane's first call to the actual podium. Like he had never been.
Sure. So as Colin said, it comes down to Arlie and Netta. And you said this was a tough spot for Arlie. Is that really the case though? Like, is there too much of a downside to him winning this thing here? Because that there are two obvious outsiders in the form of Sabrina and Michelle. If you win, you put those two up, people would understand that your HOH win was, if not accidental, at least not a great display of your like athletic or mental prowess. It's just a competition that you happen to win. And it seems like he could emerge from that week pretty much unscathed.
Actually, I have maybe an alternative take as to why both of them would at least conceivably not want this particular HOH is because it's during the fast hour, right? That is, I mean, I don't know, maybe whatever you guys want to think, what's worse, this, a double eviction HOH or the final five HOH? Because to me, they're like just the absolute pits.
I totally agree with that. I think final five HOH probably has more downside than this, just because I feel like when it's a double eviction, you know that things are going to basically be going according to plan, where even if you can't compete in the next HOH, it's still at least going to happen that night, and you're probably not going to be on any of your allies' radars anytime soon.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It seems like if you win it here, you can at least tell to people that, well, I had to make a snap decision, we didn't have time to talk about it, so I just went with the obvious play. And it's very difficult if you're not as skilled as Ali maybe imagines himself to be. You know, at least you don't have the chance to sink yourself by saying something stupid or by getting caught out in a lie. You can just have like a very ABC HOH week and then just fade back into the background.
Actually, I'm gonna just play devil's advocate here. I think they're probably about equally as bad, but I would say that when you are the HOH during the double eviction, right, typically your HOH, people are like kowtowing to you, trying to make deals for future weeks for safety. When you're HOH during a double eviction, okay, first off, it's the fastest hour of your life. Yeah. I don't think I can ever recall any time an hour long period had gone as if it were maybe like 20 minutes, 10 minutes long. And if you are HOH, instead of being, you know, treated, you know, nicely or people being nice, trying to suck up to you, you're being pulled in every which direction from room to room, being screamed at, sworn at. I mean, it's just terrible. It's absolutely harrowing.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see all of that. I'm not sure how much it applies to Ali, though, because he's someone who definitely comes across as very shifty and who really hasn't had to make any big calls up to that point. So I think it's actually, if he does have to win one, it might be better to win this one instead of any other, where he has a week to just further that reputation as being someone you can't trust. Whereas here, it's just like he can go up, act startled for a bit, put up the two obvious nominees, and then that he can clean his hands of it.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I can see that.
Yeah, and for sure.
And the other thing is, if you put those two up, you know, it's are they really going to be winning HOH to come after you anytime soon? Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, well, one of them won't because they'll be going home. So it's
right, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You're down to what, like Rochelle versus everyone else, and that's, you know, that's pretty good set of odds.
The other thing is, if you do put those two up, I'm gonna assume that you're going to try to just get Kenny out and put him up on the back door. But I think that's almost always the play for anyone, and I would actually say including Arlie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think including Arlie, and certainly. One thing that may be even worth discussing, Ian, and I'm sure you're going to have a better recollection of this than either of us will, that the HOH immediately following a live double eviction almost always comes down to some kind of air quote skill game where it's never like endurance. It's never, or at least in modern seasons. And feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like I know with you guys, you had the one that Frank ran the table on.
The tournament set up. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Big Brother 13 onward has introduced the, which Big Brother 15 did, correctly fix the previous issue with Grossly Unfair in other seasons. But the tournament style skill game will always follow a double eviction. It seems like at this point.
Right. And that's why I would say if you're Arlie here, it's not the end of the world because you're going to be safe with pretty much anyone other than whichever of the gremlins remains.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And so I guess and in BB15, it was the banana one.
Cherry on top. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Sure. Okay, so despite her own best efforts, Netta wins this HOH, the gremlins go up, the plan to backdoor Kenny is in full effect, and he doesn't even draw he doesn't get drawn, to play Power of Veto, so Adele can sit quite comfortably on his own special power, and Arlie wins this POV himself, and Kenny gets backdoored. And I know that, before we get into parting thoughts on Kenny, it's very rarely wise to go against the house's wishes on a live double eviction, like we saw in your season, where potentially when Dan won his live HOH, maybe a hit on Shane is something that he can orchestrate if he has a full week, but certainly not if he has 10 minutes. But I'm curious if you think that Kenny leaving was a bad idea for anyone.
I'm anyone that had any control over it, no. I think that that was pretty much a foregone conclusion once the double eviction was announced and then he had won the veto during the week. It was, unless he had pulled the HOH or veto out of his hat, pretty much a foregone conclusion to me.
Yeah, and I bring it up just because, Kenny, I know it's something that we're very big fans of, is leaving yourself buffers in the game, and Kenny stands out as someone like Brenchel in BB12 or Big Frank in your own season, where as long as he's left in the game, he will be the target. So that's why I ask.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely a good point, but, I mean, for who is that even going to benefit at that point in time? Because, to me, it's almost as if he's lone wolf.
Right, and I think basically John and Arlie are the only people that may come into play for.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other issue with that is you get a thing, to use your example, like you had with Matt Hoffman, where when he doesn't put up Brentrell, suddenly everyone thinks, well, why have you not made the obvious move of putting up Brentrell? And then he gets lumped in with them in other people's minds as someone to be wary of. I think, you know, just putting Kenny here, while it might have some downsides, is just very obviously the right thing to do for almost everyone.
Well, actually, I guess I can kind of see the comparison, but at least for me, we're talking Matt Hoffman week three, yeah?
Where he
makes the seemingly, you know, very odd nomination set. I think it was, Andrew and Kathy or something.
That's right,
like that,
yeah.
Where it's just, you know, where the way he set that up was pretty good because there were exactly two people gunning for him, and the fact that he put Brentrell up, it didn't change the fact that they were always going to go after those two. After the fact, they weren't going to suddenly change it to him just because he didn't put him up. He goes into that HOH next week with the only person that would ostensibly be gunning for him being Kathy, which, I mean, that's a great spot to be in.
Right, right, yeah. And I remember after he won the week 5 HOH where he just couldn't pull it out. He couldn't, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. He can't. Yeah. He has to go for Brentrell at that point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there's no other option.
Right, okay, so I guess let's give some parting thoughts on Kenny. I thought Kenny was surely one of the more interesting players during the early part of this season. He certainly got plenty of screen time. So certainly, I'd love to hear what either of you guys has to say about Kenny.
I think, actually, this is a very interesting casting choice. I know that one thing that a lot of people on various forums liked about him is that typically on Big Brother United States, whenever a homosexual male is cast on the show, they're very camp. They're very obviously gay, right? He didn't fit the mold, and I think it was very interesting to see someone that was more masculine in that position.
Right. It's kind of like, not since maybe even Richard Hatch have we seen anyone like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the closest Big Brother US has come to this is Steven, but even he was it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, right, he does maybe, the rodeo. Yeah. Sorry, Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, maybe like Will from BB5.
I don't even know about that.
Yeah.
Because everyone in the BB5 house is like, okay, so you're the gay guy, right?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, that is kind of shaky. But I thought that Kenny and Richard Hatch comparisons would be brought out in maybe some other ways as well, but yeah, it didn't turn out that way. I do agree that he's a very good casting choice, though, and I think one thing I've heard about this season, maybe more than most others, is that the edited broadcasts that we see 3 times a week just aren't an accurate reflection of what's going on in the house a lot of the time. And so on the show, we see Kenny as this kind of mostly mild-mannered guy who's in this alliance and seems to be doing pretty well. But then you see the scale of loathing that a lot of the casual fans seem to have from him. And it left me wondering, like, is he just terrible on the feed or something? Like, is there some thing we're not seeing behind the scenes? Maybe you can fill me in on that.
As someone who watched a fair bit of the feeds when Kenny was on, he certainly didn't come across any worse on the feeds than he did to me, than he did on the show to me, at least, I should say. Ian, I certainly would be interested in hearing if you had the same ideas.
Took the words right out of my mouth. I think it's just guilt by association with Andrew and Sabrina, first off.
Yeah. Yeah, he certainly never at any point came across as, like, impersonable or anything like that to me.
Yeah, there was at no point where there was no point at all where I was actively rooting against Kenny.
Right, right. Okay, and I think the very interesting thing to note about Kenny is that he will not be a juror this season. And I know we've already talked about Canada. It seems like that's the foregone conclusion about what's going to happen there. We have already talked about that. Whether you like it or not, that's just the way things are going to go in Big Brother Canada. And I'm okay with that. So let's move on to the next HOH, and John ends up winning this HOH for the first time.
Yeah, he did. And, I mean, I don't know, good for him. You know, I think that at that point there was a very clear line drawn, and I think that HOH was going to dictate the way things played out for quite a while.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like John is someone who may not have necessarily needed to win the HOH himself, but certainly when John does win the HOH, the game is about to start getting very real.
Yeah, I think Final Eight is about the point in time where Rob and I had this conversation last weekend, where it seems like the game almost becomes a new one. Like, that seems to be the point where it's like a you're no longer in the early mid game and you're now in mid late game, and things seem to get shuffled up a bit.
Right, and it's because it immediately, at least in Big Brother US, follows the live double eviction.
Correct.
Right, yeah, and so John nominates the Gremlins, those being, of course, Sabrina and Michelle. And I'm curious what you thought about, because we saw them on the live broadcast, and I'll say right now, this is something I would have been very interested in, is their idea that they want to work with John and Netta and start shifting turning the tables, I should say, on the rest of the house. And this is something I would be very seriously considering in John's spot. At the same time, also understanding that, yes, I can still put them up and backdoor someone. So I'm curious what you thought about John's nominations here when he does, in fact, put them up.
I mean, for me, the way that I would think about it is that these are two great goats to go to the end with. I mean, you're going to win as long as you aren't the one that's decimating your alliance completely. And I think you Harley out here, and you'd be just fine. I don't think anyone would pitch a fit about it. And, you know, you're going to be in a good spot. But at the same time, if you are John and you're in that position, you're going to be relying on both Netta to these HOHs to keep the target off your back. So you need to have at least some sort of group to rally behind you, at least going forward. And I certainly wouldn't say that Sabrina and Rochelle are necessarily that group. Like, I want at least, you know, I think Adele is probably more capable than either of them, although we haven't seen much from him. So I would probably want at least him or Heather, one of those, you know, to go along.
Right. It's kind of like Rochelle could maybe do you some favors in endurance, but what's Sabrina ever really going to be doing for you other than being a vote in your direction?
Right. Or being someone you want to sit next to at the end.
Right. Yeah. But I think with John, at least, and we'll get more into this, I think John has bigger plans than sitting next to Sabrina, and I certainly think that'd be wrong of him, but certainly I think he wants to probably be there against Netta. Like, he shouldn't want to, but he does.
No, yeah, I think he I fully expect that to be what he's intending, and as you say, you know, the difference between Feed and the show, I don't know why this is the case. I mean, actually, we'll get onto this later. I think that this is actually really a season of Big Brother for me, where the females are in the house and they're just kicking ass. They're hauling some serious ass. And I think that the way that I say on Twitter, I say, well, Netta's a really good player. And they will say things to me like, oh yeah, great player from John's back pocket. Which, if you're watching the feed, that is clearly not what's going on at all.
Yeah, well, and we will. Sorry, Doc, go ahead.
Yeah, well, let me ask you then, is it that the women are kicking ass, or is it that Netta is doing well? Because it seems like, you know, we can praise Heather, and, you know, she's certainly having a good few weeks. Sarah seems to be doing well, but now she's obviously gone. Is it just that Netta is making the others look better by association?
I would actually say it was Netta. I was going to say Sarah was doing very well until just, like, the, you know, the dreaded fluke comes up and she goes. And, I mean, I think Heather is in a pretty decent spot as well. And, I mean, look at the house. They're you know, men are becoming a commodity. Like, there aren't many of them left.
Right. What is it? John and Adele are the only ones left?
Exactly. I mean, it's the women are doing very well this year.
Yeah. So let's move on to this POV now, I think, where John wins the POV himself, and this backdoor plan comes into motion at Arlie's expense as John vetoes Rochelle and puts up Arlie, but not so fast. Allison whips out her secret power of veto, vetoes Sabrina. And I'm very curious what you thought about how the secret power of veto was implemented, because I know, Ian, just talking to you off air, you were very on top of how this all went down.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think that I actually really like – here's the thing, producers. I like these twists. This is fine with me. You want to put a gold veto in a claw machine and have like a mini extra mini comp or something? for it, you know, fine. You want to put this, you know, in the house for a limited time, as long as it doesn't become a regular thing. I think that's awesome. I think these are really good inventive twists that I think people want to see. Coup d'etat on Big Brother 7. Fine. Awesome. I mean, the audience is involved. I really like seeing these things. These are twists that I can really get behind. And I think that the way it was done was definitely fun and interesting to watch, though I would have liked it to have been, I mean, once Allison had found the first clue, it's pretty much hers. Like, there was no one that could ever contend for it from that point on. So I would have liked to have seen, you know, maybe sort of like, to quote Survivor, a mad treasure hunt, where maybe someone else could get the clue and there are two people actively looking for it at once. That's my only qualm.
Yeah, and I'm curious as to how this was implemented. Was this, how did Allison get that first clue? Because this is something that wasn't very clear to me.
So they came in from a lockdown of some sort, or they were locked in somewhere, and there were new plants that were sitting on, like, pedestals in the upstairs area. And the idea was that since they were new, I guess you were supposed to, given the idea that there was that counter there, I guess you were supposed to infer that, hey, maybe something's up with these plants, and the first clue was in a note in the plant.
Yeah, now, I saw some chat about, maybe this wasn't explicitly rigged for Allison, but that given the setup that they went for, she was by far the most likely person to get it. Not just because it was in the flowers where you might expect the girls to look more so than the guys, but also when the final location is in that war room that she used to be in, she is the only person there who knows that there was a secret room and who, even if she was blindfolded when she was brought in, might at least have some idea of where it could be just based on its size and everything else. So, do you think there's any merit to that, or is it just Allison was very lucky to get it and then be the one who's going to be able to find it?
I mean, well, let's you know, think about it this way. If Allison, you know, doesn't find the plant clue, like, say, you know, I think Sabrina noticed it, like, a couple hours later, and, you know, God forbid, but she notices it a couple hours later. I mean, is there really any distinct advantage that Allison has at this point? Probably not. I mean, you could say, yeah, the girls are more likely to look in the flowers, but at least for me in Big Brother 14, there was one thing that whenever we had that comp, obviously the feeds were down with the quarters and whatnot. But one thing I had noticed pretty early on within the living room of the house was on a like a little small table near the where that television screen is. So somewhere close to there was a lamp and there was a little Asian cat thing that said like Tokyo or whatever on it and like little small letters to go with the Japanese theme of the house. I'd actually noticed that by picking it up that it was actually a small bank. And as soon as I had understood that we were doing something for the claw machine, my immediate intention, because it was not immediately obvious that it was going to be in the backyard, I ran for that bank and started shaking it like mad. So just being perceptive, I think, is the key here.
Right, and I can verify that once we even learned that Secret Power of Veto was going in, just talking to Ian off air, his first thought was, I'm looking through the bushes and the shrubbery that's hanging in the ceiling.
Right, and it wasn't those plants. They were small potted plants, but same idea. Like, that's right. My first key idea, and if I notice anything new, I'm going to, like, pick it apart.
Yeah, I guess my concern isn't really about the plants, but more so with the location, more so with the war room, where...
Right.
Just knowing that that exists, even if you don't know exactly where it is, it's like knowing that there is a secret room somewhere in the house and it has to be like, you know that, for instance, you're not going to like turn over a chair and find some trapdoor or something. Like, you have a decent idea of where it has to be just because you've been in it for a week.
My counter to that is that say Allison just never happens across the clue and Sabrina gets it. Like, it serves no advantage to Allison because she doesn't even know it's there. I mean, I don't think they were ever told there was a hidden veto in there. Otherwise, it'd be a mad scramble, you know, from the forefront of it. And, you know, with no clue, she's never even going to try to attempt to get in there. And actually, as far as what I'd read online, I think Kenny had spent much of the earlier weeks sitting near what, like, those book things that she had, like, turn a certain way. I'd heard that Kenny had been, like, fumbling around with those, trying to get it to open up for quite a while, and just it wasn't the right time.
Yeah, and I think maybe there isn't anything suspicious about this, but I think Allison, given the circumstances under which she entered the game, is just naturally going to be more attuned to the fact that there is going to be something going on here. And so, you know, as you said, she was the only one to really look through the plants. like Nada like deigned to pick up a leaf or something at some point to just give it a go, but Allison was like seriously rummaging through it and ended up finding it when it seemed to be pretty open for the taking if anyone had wanted to look.
Yeah, no, that was absolutely true. That's definitely the case. I mean, I guess you could, because Allison was in on a, you know, very sort of in on a twist, I guess you could be more. I mean, it's Big Brother Canada. We've had a season like there and the counter, right? That to me is what the big giveaway is, right? The counter, something is up.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the idea of production favorites, but do you think they really have someone who it would make sense for them to want to win the season? Because, you know, Allison comes in, is voted in as at least a fan favorite of those three people, but it seems like she really hasn't endeared herself to the audience beyond that. And I'm not right. sure there's anyone who really stands out as, like, the Frank or Jeff figure who people are going to root for. John seems to be pretty well-liked, but maybe doesn't have that same kind of following. So, like, is he the best of a bad bunch in that regard?
If I were a Big Brother Canada producer, my immediate thought is that, I mean, you kind of want winners to be different, right? You know, you want Jillian to win the first one. You want the next winner to be, you know, ostensibly somewhat different. So I would imagine that, like, a male John winner, or like someone perhaps like Adele, would be the producer pick. But I could also see, like, you know, even off the scope of that, like Netta, I could see definitely being someone they would want to win.
Right. And isn't John, if I'm, you know, I follow several Twitter accounts that talk about Big Brother Canada updates. I think among those, if there's even, I don't know what the Canada equivalent of a Joker's poll is, but is John not the most popular person in the house as far as the casual viewer is concerned?
Well, there is a Joker's poll for Canada, okay. Actually. And Heather and Netta are by far the most popular, with John at a pretty firm number three.
Okay.
Heather and pop it every couple days, I think, but John is pretty up there.
Okay. I thought I read somewhere that John was, as far as casual viewers were concerned, was the runaway favorite. But Heather and Netta makes sense, I suppose. Yeah, so let's talk about, you know, now that we've talked about Allison actually finding the veto, let's talk about how she used it, because she ends up using this veto on Sabrina after John has already vetoed Rochelle. And my question is, why not sit on it, right?
Well, here's the thing. I could understand the virtue in using it how she did. Like, that to me makes sense. Because she becomes the swing vote and she can, you know, go with whichever side she wants to go with. But the thing is, for me, she was the swing vote up until, you know, the day before when it was found out that she was going to lean one, or the day of, and it was going to lean a certain way and everybody changed their votes. And to me, if you're going to use the veto, you have to continue carrying out what would be the expected reason you would use it, right? All she did was swap out a pawn. Like, if she were to go the other way and boot the person that went up as a result, like, that to me makes pretty good sense. But she didn't really do anything besides swap a pawn out. And I mean, yeah, you could say, why use the veto in that situation?
Right. That's why I am saying, why use the veto where Arlie's going to go either way. Why waste your secret veto when you could potentially use it on yourself as soon as the next round?
Well, it expired.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe her idea is, given that it is going to expire this round, if she can use it on Sabrina, then if she knows that's the side she's going with in future weeks, then it just helps to build trust with that side. Yeah, as much as it kind of draws a line in the sand and alienates her from the other group. But yeah, I think if you're going to use it here, you really have to, I think the obvious play is, boot whoever goes up, so in this case Adele, take Arlie in, who's now just, you know, he was trying to be blindsided by John, so he's not going to go back there. You have this new four-person group with the Gremlins, yourself, and Arlie, and you can just run the table for as long as you like.
Yeah, to me, like, this it very much reeks of the situation in Big Brother 9, where it is that game where, a little bit earlier, where it's like the buzz-in face-off, and it comes down to Adam and, I believe, Chelsea, and Adam is very clearly trying to throw it to Chelsea, but accidentally answers the question correctly to win.
Well, then, in the worst fashion possible, where he answers the one name that hasn't been brought up yet.
Yeah, well, right, of course. And he wins it. He's clearly distraught about the fact he won, because he knew that he was in a pretty good spot. And then his immediate nominations are James and the person he was trying to throw it to, Chelsea. So it very much reeks of that to me.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, but that always, that competition always irks me, where if Adam's trying to throw it, ring in with any name other than Amanda, I think was the name that he came up with.
Right, ring in with whichever was the question before.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk now about how all this goes down, where Arlie and Adele are now up on the block, and it looks like Allison's going to be the swing vote between Netta and Heather, and the Gremlins, and I suppose the Gremlins are two people, so that's the swing vote. What are you looking to do here? Because it seems like, as you brought up, that if you keep in Arlie and the Gremlins and you solidify a solid four, all of you guys are playing next week in the HOH against just Heather and Netta. Why did this not come through?
Right, that's why this whole thing just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, that seemed to be pretty clearly the right play. I mean, I would not be worried about having Arlie in my corner. Like, yeah, okay, Sabrina and Rochelle, kind of dead weight. But at the same time, if you have Arlie there, that's someone who could definitely win a competition. And he, as he said, he's guns blazing for John. And you're in a pretty cushy spot moving forward.
Right, yeah. And he's always going to be a big buffer for you going ahead. His competition wins are going to work for your advantage. I don't see much of a downside. And maybe this speaks to how good of a player Netta is. Yeah, exactly.
And that's right where I was about to go with it. I mean, apparently Netta pulled it out of the fire because from what I understand, Adele was pretty much gone. And there were some conversations up in the HOH room. And yeah, she pulled it right out of the fire and just, I mean, went from 3-2 to just 5-0 within the span of 2 days. So, you know, A-plus work for her.
Yeah, and it seems like this vote should never, ever be 5-0 here. That it should, something this momentous should, you know, draw a line between two sides of the house, and it should come out like 3-2, or there should at least be some split that rises from this. But instead, like, if you're just going along with the outcome that John originally wanted anyway, how is that going to help? I guess the idea is Arlie by himself is a threat that you're going to have to deal with down the road, even if you're signing with him, and that...
Yeah.
The risk of that isn't worth the added value of having him on board for the next HOH. But to even get to that point in the first place, you have to win that next HOH because that's going to determine who has the momentum going forward.
And
if Arlie's there, you have a much better chance of doing that.
I'm really sorry. I did not mean to butt in there.
No, it's fine. Carry on.
Well, actually, what I was also going to say is I don't necessarily know that Arlie is someone who would care about this, but by pitching the two votes the other way against him, I mean, even if you know he's going to go home, he is going to sit on the jury. So that is definitely a consideration that would be at least running through my head.
Yeah, definitely. And it certainly it strikes me that I guess we've already kind of gone over this, but it signals to me that that vote should always not only just have some kind of dissension, it should basically always be 3-2 for the considerations that we've mentioned, which is, if you're going to keep Arlie, if you're Allison or the Gremlins, that's probably a great idea. If you're not going to keep Arlie, still vote for him to stay anyway if you're the Gremlins, because that way he's, as a juror, still going to view you more favorably.
Right, but let's go back a step quickly, because we haven't really touched on the plan that John was trying to put into effect here, which is backdooring Arlie in the first place. Now, John, and again, this seems to be all Netta's doing, and she really just wanted to split up John and Arlie. But when John has spent his entire HOH week going so far as to form a final two deal with Arlie and getting so close to him, if you give in to Netta that easily, is that really going to be good for your game long term?
Probably not, right?
Nah, I don't really see that being very beneficial to him. Yeah, really at all. That's the thing is, at this point, I think what John's doing is, I could see Arlie being somewhat bitter once he gets to the jury, and I think he's burning jury votes.
I think Arlie could be like a Peter Brown type, where he fancies himself as this kind of rational juror who's going to vote based on gameplay, but then when it comes down to that, he goes in the complete opposite direction.
I was thinking about this earlier today. Peter Brown, true or false, most bitter juror of all time. In Big Brother North American history.
Okay, well, in Big Brother North American, oh golly, that's actually tough. I mean, Frank, I mean, when you're prepared, when you're telling Jeff Schroeder in your post interviews that if Jen is there, you're voting for her, that to me is like that's a huge red flag. But
yeah.
I could see, as far as like active impetus and sway within the jury house, That I could actually see that. Though, you know, I mean, whatever, he has his own reasons for it, and, you know, that's his thing, but I could see where that's definitely something to say.
Right, and Dom read those reasons in his best Giles from Whodunit impersonation in our Big Brother Canada 1 podcast, for anyone who's interested in that. Yeah. Okay, so let's give some parting thoughts on Arlie. And we've got some interesting questions from Twitter about this, because as we've all certainly come to know, Arlie definitely fancies himself as kind of a mastermind of Big Brother. And I think a very good question we got from Twitter is, Ian, what does a Big Brother mastermind actually look like? Like, what goes into that?
Well, if you Google search Will Kirby and then click images, like, that's what you're going to be looking at.
Yes, exactly.
But basically, okay, so, you know, throw the competitions early, obviously. You know, first HOH notwithstanding, I think you can get away with that at this point in time. I think the key is flexibility, right? At least the problem that I had was I could plan out what I wanted to do. I could do things. I could be like, well, there's a very small chance that this will happen, and that it'll be good as long as it doesn't happen. But once it comes in, then it's like, oh, I'm fucked now, and that's a problem. So I think that being able to adapt what you're going to do after the events happen is what's, you know, going to be really good for you. And that's what makes Dan very good, is that there really might not be a lot of planning, but even though something comes in after the fact, he can do the seat of the pants and just, you know, now suddenly things are back in his favor. So I think that flexibility and adaptability is something good. Arlie came close to pulling it out, but he was you know, I think he was upstaged by Netta here.
Right. I'll jump in here because, Colin, you also fancied Arlie as being a Big Brother mastermind. What was the driving force behind your initial confidence in him?
Okay. Mastermind is a term I would literally reserve for only two people, those being Will and Dan. I've said many, many times before, it's hard to be even good at Big Brother. It's near impossible to be a mastermind at Big Brother. Where everything, regardless of how any competition outcome goes, it's going to go your way and it doesn't matter. That is reserved solely for Will and Dan. And I would say what you will about, at least for me, Hayden and Andy and Emmett, where I feel like they at least made active mistakes, but we're not on that same level. No, go ahead.
Where did Andy make any mistake in that game, aside from being up against a sorry 15 individuals that will cause him to lose credit?
Right, and that's what, I would say the next tier down from Will and Dan is Andy, Hayden, Emmett, and perhaps Eric Stein, although it's tough to rank Eric Stein's game in BB8, just because, you know, he had the burden of being America's player. But I honestly feel like the list ends there at actively great Big Brother players.
I don't want this to just evolve into, like, you know, who is your top 10 or whatever, but I feel that's where it's going. But the thing for me with Eric is that I would actually class him, it's almost like this pseudo Will Dan, where because of America's Player, it was not only the competitions, it was these results of, you know, seemingly arbitrary votes where he was able to just sway his way regardless of whatever came up on top of the competitions, which is already a burden enough.
Right.
So to me, I think that speaks volumes, that I'm going to trust that if he is able to dictate what he can do, he's going to do very, very well there no matter what. And the fact that he had to make things that are just strategically absurdly bad, like we're talking comically awful decisions, but still sway them in his direction. I think that is, like, he's good at what I call seat of the pants screwing. And that is something that Will and Dan are excellent at.
Right, and you will find no objection here. And I certainly, the only fault, the only points I would deduct from Andy or Hayden are that Andy had the benefit of being in good enough with the MVP, which was always going to be Alyssa, and Hayden had the benefit of Brenchel running some competitions and deflecting shade off of the Brigade for as long as possible. Like, those aren't, they're certainly... there are no faults to be found, but it's certainly not what we've seen demonstrated by Will and Dan over both of their respective games.
Correct. I mean, there's a very clear top two, and nobody really even comes close. I'd be willing to listen to arguments for Andy to be in the top four games, but I probably would shut it down. I think that's firmly number five. And to me, the only thing, I don't think Hayden is even quite close to that. I'd say there's even a gap after Andy, because there were points where if Hayden had some unfavorable competition outcome come up, I think he was going to be in hot water.
Right, and I was thinking about this earlier today, and sorry for getting off on such a tangent to all the listeners there, which is, I feel like Will's game in BB7 and Dan's game in BB10 are clearly just, like, the two most perfect games ever played, and probably their other two games are 4 and 5, but I could see putting Andy at number, is as high as number 3.
I would be willing to listen to arguments for that as 3. But I'd be much more content listening to 4, but I would still probably say no after quite a while.
Right. Well, point being here is that, as I said at the top of this tangent, that it's very hard to even be good at Big Brother. And I feel like Arley, you know, fancies himself as a mastermind. And I'm curious what you think prevented him in getting in the way of that, because it seems like he had the absolute right mentality.
Well, he did have the right mentality going in. And to me, I did bring this up on RHAP last night, where it seems that historically we see a lot of players that are pretty confident at the game go out around 7 or 8. I mean, I would say Helen is fairly confident. I'd say James Ryan is someone that's pretty confident. Matt Hoffman. And it's about this time in the game where the superior player sharks out their biggest threat and they end up getting like a pretty unceremonious 7th or 8th place finish.
Right. Who do you think that means bad things for here? Apart from Arley, you know, we see Arley go out in 8th. Could that potentially mean bad things for instance, John here?
I mean, definitely. I think John is probably the biggest target walking right now, which is, obviously why I think Netta is in a pretty good position. But at the same time, she's one John POV went away from walking out the door and talking to Arissa. So, I think it's definitely bad for John. But at the end of the day, we're at that point now where, spoiler alert, is that okay? I mean...
Okay. We always anticipate that whoever's listening to this is also keeping up with the live feed, certainly if they're, you know, an hour and a half into this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, spoiler alert, Netta being HOH, and with this week, as far as what I understand, being an instant eviction that she has to run from the war room, like, they're already banked. Both of them are already banked for top 6. So, from that point on, competition wins become pretty much the more crucial component of the game. I mean, yeah, there's a little bit of room to play strategically and things like that, but it's really who's bringing home the comp wins. And at this point, I mean, you're in a position once you hit 6, as far as I'm concerned, where as long as you're reasonably good at comps, like, you can play for the title.
Right, yeah, and it's certainly something that I anticipate seeing being the driving force behind John and Netta's game, which is as one of the two of them can rattle off either one of the competitions from this point forward, they're going to be pretty tough to stop.
Yeah, and I mean, just from like a historical perspective, I always think about these strange scenarios where like Big Brother 6, you know, they offer that huge jackpot for like if a pair could make it to the final 2. Mm-hmm. But really, I mean, as long as there's one or two pairs, if there's even one pair that makes it to like final 6 together, I mean, the chances of them ping-ponging HOH back and forth are really not that, you know, ill-conceived. Like, it would be, you know, a lot of luck in getting there. But at the same time, that's something that could definitely happen as long as they were reasonably confident about it. So, I mean, to me, this is something that could definitely be done.
Right, and as, and sorry,
I mean, we almost saw it last year with Emmett and Jillian. I mean,
right.
I mean, I always say Peter, you know, I talk to Peter a lot. He'll say, well, I don't think Jillian was this, blah, 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 blah. I say it's very difficult to win if you have a pair and just passing HOH back and forth. Like, that's never going to end well for you. Like, you have a monopoly on HOH, you know, game over.
Right, right. Oh, absolutely. Of course. Yeah. And I'm curious, it's kind of yet another tangent where I believe Bo and Yvette were the last pair standing.
They were the last pair standing, which, I mean, yeah, obviously that's not a pair that you're going to expect to do well, but like, let's just say hypothetical, like, we get some weird blood versus water season or something like that, where you got like Frank and Sidudi at final 6, like,
you know, good luck.
Yeah, it's like, have a good time with that, kids.
I don't see that really playing out.
Yeah, well, you never know.
Yeah. All right. You know, Ian already prefaced this, and I think now's the time to get into it. Netta is the new HOH. She is trapped in the war room. What's that all about?
You know, as far as I'm understanding, she is in the war room, but she's gonna have to do an instant eviction type nominations like we saw with Topaz next year. Please, God, producers, don't show her thoughts to the rest of the house.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's even aware that it's an instant eviction, but from what I understand, she was locked in the war room, and she's being treated very well there. I think she said, like, I think she had the opportunity to get fast food from anywhere. So, I mean, I guess that's marginal, but they delivered her fast food from wherever she wanted for breakfast or something like that. So she has to run her HOH from the war room. People are pretty aware that that's where she is, as most people have been crowded near that wall. So, yeah. You know, it is what it is. I think that, as I said on RHAP last night, she's not in any position. She should be able to get whatever she wants out of this week based on how the votes will always play out, so long as she knows that whatever nominations she makes are permanent, and I think she might be able to put two and two together. The other thing is, I don't know if this is just an old picture that has resurfaced or not. I don't know if it's taken weeks ago or whatever, or if Big Brother Canada just released it as a press photo, because the feeds are down. I did see on Twitter a picture of Adele, like, jumping out of the dryer and Netta jumping out of the washing machine while wearing, like, bunny ears. So they may have been given those as Easter. So she might be out of it for all I know. But, I mean, that could have been an old pic from weeks ago.
Okay. My main concern, if I'm Netta here, is despite the fact that I can see but not hear the rest of the cast, I would fear that I was getting... you know, in BB4, when June won the Final Five HOH and she got shipped off to the MTV Music Awards and had to make her nominations blind of who won veto. And I know that given that this is likely an instant eviction, or at least maybe even confirmed an instant eviction, I would be very concerned. That would at least be the thought crossing through my head, is I have to make my nominations blind of who wins this veto.
Right. And, you know, that's actually a very good point. These types of things, I'm going to go on a soapbox here. I am strongly, strongly against taking players out of the house or any situation solitary confinement as a punishment is one thing, because it's, you know, quite openly a punishment that you're either getting because you sucked at a competition or you agreed to take it. But I'm really, really against these types of things where you win a competition and you don't know that this is a result. Actually, I might want to say this off the record, right?
Go for it.
Big Brother 14, Final Five veto competition. That Olympic thing, that trip, that wasn't even on the table when any of us won that. Like, that was a surprise. We went into the house and there was a thing that said veto winner in an envelope. And we didn't know what it was. We had no idea that whoever won it was automatically leaving the house for, you know, 9 hours, 8 hours. And the audio was edited back in from me saying, I mean, you could tell it pretty clearly that it was an audio clip that I had done in the DR and edited in post. Where if I had won that and I'm suddenly without any say over it, just jettisoned out of the house for 9 hours, you know, I'm going to have a conniption fit. Like, right. Yeah, okay, I get to meet Olympians. Yeah, whatever. Okay. I have other things on my mind.
Who would you have taken?
I would have gone with Dan.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, like, at that, like, I'm going out of the house. Like, I want ideal company.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also, I want ideal company not to fuck up everything else that's going on for me.
Right, exactly. Like, if there's someone in there that I want to, you know, watch Cirque du Soleil with and make fun of it, then obviously him.
Right, it's certainly not Danielle, Shane, or Jen, so yeah.
Correct.
All right, so Netta is trapped in the war room now. We may be faced with this instant eviction, and I'm curious what you think the ramifications are of this, because it seems like with ideas of potentially putting up the gremlins and backdooring Allison, that may be off the table.
Correct. And that, to me, is something that I am at least, concerned about moving forward, because I feel like that would probably be your ideal play, this round. Dom, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's just weird because Allison just really isn't playing a normal game by any description, because she gets parachuted in under this kind of strange Canada's vote, and then she's really kind of ostracized by most of the house, and then she's kind of buddies up with Andrew and just with him all the time. And then when she's back in the game, suddenly she gets a secret veto, and then now maybe she was going to be backdoored, but now can't be. It's just every week it seems like something weird is happening to Allison, and her journey through the game is more strange than maybe anybody else's.
Oh, I would say by far her journey definitely. Through the game, yeah.
No doubt about it. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Nothing else to add there.
Okay. Well, okay. So, I mean, unless we have anything more to add about this, Netta's ideas as HOHer, I feel like there's so much where she should be, as they say, Ian, expecting the unexpected here. And by the way, do they ever even say that on Big Brother Canada?
No. I mean, it's the Twisto's twist.
Yeah.
So right. I don't know what a Twisto is.
I sure don't either.
I think it's a chip. I think it's either that or it's like a chicken wrap with lettuce. It's one of those two things. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, yet to be determined. But I think from this point on, then, you know, Netta's the reigning HOH. And I think as we start to evaluate the remaining players and their chances going forward, Ian, I know you have done so and I have done so. I would be surprised if Dom has done so. But nonetheless, we have arranged our own must-win draft boards. And I think the place that I want to start is with my number one overall pick of those that are remaining in the house. And that is, of course, with Netta. And I feel like best player in the house by quite a wide margin, I should say.
No, absolutely. I mean, this is number one on my board as well. Has that great buffer in John at a point where the two of them can, you know, ping pong HOH back and forth going into final six. I mean, this girl is in pretty much the position that dreams are made of on Big Brother. And, you know, I think that this is actually a really interesting thing. And I think this is probably the appropriate time to divert it. We've had conversations on Twitter and whatnot where she's clearly heading towards the top ranks of any female players, you know, certainly in the top 10 by this point. And she is really, really doing well. So what do you think about that?
Well, Ian, that's just so sexist. I can't believe you'd bring that up.
You know, actually, to anyone that has said anything like that to me on Twitter, jokers, Survivor sucks. Okay, there's this thing. Right, we have winner ranking lists, right? We have our top lists. And, see, we all know from when we took linear algebra, there are these things called subsets. And taking the female players from the list and just putting them into two groups, male and female, doesn't make it sexist. It just means that it's a subset of a list that's already established, which is, in fact, not sexist.
Ian, so that's far too logical for the average Big Brother fan, but I'm totally with you. And I know we both tweeted something to this effect a couple of days ago, which is Netta could quite conceivably go down as the best female ever to play Big Brother.
Yeah, I mean, she's really, really good. I mean, it's just textbook. It's as if she just, like, had somehow purchased a book on how to do well in this game, and she just followed it to a T. I mean, it's really, really good. She had it down from the beginning. She's throwing the competitions. Like I said earlier, I mean, at that point, what separated Netta from Allison? Really nothing. There was no, in my mind, I mean, yeah, she seemed much more perceptive from our perspective, but certainly from within the house, that's not obvious at all. And I think that she's doing very well. I mean, you know, it remains to be seen whether she'll crack like that top, you know, three or so females where it's very, very obviously Danielle Reyes, June, and Maggie, much to the chagrin of some people listening on that third one. But, I mean, will she crack that? It remains to be seen, but definitely very good.
No doubt about that. I could hear arguments for Lisa maybe over above Maggie. But I certainly think...
I'm not willing to listen to that.
Okay. Well, then we won't bring it up. But I certainly think, I feel like there are the other people that I brought up, that were brought up to me, I should say, when I posed this on Twitter were Nokomis and Brittany 2.0, both of whom I think are valid. Nokomis, I don't think, does herself many favors within the game, but when she finds herself in a good position, she's very good at it.
My only thing with Nokomis is I guess she has what I would call like an Ian Terry problem, where I could see you just chuck her into a random season. I feel like there are just so many seasons where she is just the first boot by, you know, a country mob. She does seem pretty chill, so she did survive nomination early on, but there are many times where I could see that being the case. You know, there is sort of that idea of a loose cannon where, yeah, she's going to get drunk and tank her game a couple times, but she's very good. I think that Brittany 2.0 is definitely a very strong name to bring up, and I would certainly put in, like, the top six or seven. And for my money, I think the list, maybe to Koss's chagrin, I think Shelly is definitely worth a mention in there.
Okay. Very fair.
One question, then. Yeah. Because you would think, you know, and this goes back to the discussion we had earlier, I guess that you two had earlier.
And Nicole Nilsson, sorry.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know about that. But okay, go ahead, John.
Oh, no, okay, if you don't think she's in the top 10, like, who else are you putting in there?
That's a fair question, but it's certainly, the list is cut off at good before I put in Nicole.
Okay, well, I'd also put Danielle Donato in, so, and likewise. I mean, I think Janelle is a lock for different reasons because of competitiveness, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you would expect, I think, women in general to do better at Big Brother than they would at Survivor, just based on the different nature of the two games. But if you look at the list of Survivor greats and compare it to the list of Big Brother greats, the Big Brother list is overwhelmingly populated by men, whereas if you look at the Survivor list, maybe the number one is Kim, and then beyond that there are lots of other very capable women who can fill out that list. Why do you think that is, then? Like, is it just a failure of casting, or what? Because I certainly think Neda is playing a great game at the moment, but for her to just automatically be in that conversation just based on what we've seen so far, surely there's something that's gone wrong somewhere.
Yeah, and actually this is you know, a really great point. And I actually think that what I'm going to say here is I think it comes down to casting differences between vintage Big Brother and modern Big Brother. So up until before Big Brother 10 or so, if I were having a casual conversation with, you know, school chums that also watch Big Brother at lunch, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt in anyone's mind that Danielle Reyes would probably be ranked in the top two or three, as well as June. So if we take it back to, like, 07 at high school, like, there's no way that Danielle Reyes, June are ever being left out of our top five. And I think that stronger female contestants were casted back then in 8. You know, we had sort of like the show took a bit of a darker turn. Big Brother kind of went evil, as I would say. And then, you know, we had a sort of a different casting perspective from then on, where the casting did focus on, you know, so-called like bikini babes. And, you know, nothing against any of them. It's just that it's very rare that that is packaged all in one. Like, you're not going to see, you know, I mean, do I want to say Kim is a bikini babe? Probably not, but it's very rare that we get all in one.
Right. And I'm curious, just now that we're talking about it, where you would put Janelle?
Well, Janelle is definitely a top 10 female player by default. See, I actually was toying with this idea last night. To me, in Big Brother, there's sort of something of like a Mendoza line, if you will. If you're familiar with baseball at all, you know the Mendoza line is that there was this gentleman, I believe he played for the Mets.
That's accurate, Mets?
I believe he played for the Mets, and he had about a 200 batting average.
Like exactly 200 over like 9 seasons,
It was about exactly 200. However, he was a very good second baseman, I believe. He was a very good fielder. Shortstop? I don't remember. But he was a very good fielder. And the idea of the Mendoza line is it's been you know, mentioned is that is there a point at which strategic shortcomings in Big Brother, at least in the analogy that I'm going to make, could strategic shortcomings be made up for by just being able to bang off competition wins? And to me, that's sort of this idea of the Mendoza line. In baseball, yeah, he wasn't that great of a hitter. He was decidedly very average or even below average, but he was such a good fielder that the idea of the Mendoza line, 200, if someone can field very well, they don't hit very well, that's the line where it's like, okay, this is acceptable and this isn't acceptable. In Big Brother, it's sort of the same way. Can strategic shortcomings be made up for by the ability to bang off competition wins? And I believe that Janelle is above this Mendoza line, whereas someone like Rachel is not. I'd say that I'm sitting on about the Mendoza line. So, right. You know, these are the types of things that I look at when I'm ranking players, because competitions do play a large part in it. And, that's how I feel about this particular situation. So I think Janelle by default, just because she's above the Mendoza line. But, otherwise I really much to be desired strategically from her.
Yeah. And I know that we've talked off air about, Jerry Lancaster being the solid over-under, but I feel like G Cho is absolutely the Mendoza line where he can bang off comps.
Yeah, in a vintage season, I think that he was like one of two people, maybe three to, I think he was one of two to hold HOH more than once in that season, Allison being the obvious other one. I'm not sure about Robert or Erica, but yeah, you're absolutely right. I think G Cho is solidly your, over under Matt from Survivor Amazon. So,
right, Matthew von Riffelfelden line. Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I certainly think that, but I think as far as your Mendoza line for Big Brother goes, I think that I think Ian Terry is certainly a good pick for that.
Oh, I think I was gonna say the other day, at least you're solidly above the G Cho line. Yeah.
No. There's no doubt about it. I think G Cho or Jerry is like your 50% median, but as far as the idea of can competition prowess overcome strategic shortcomings, I think either Janelle or I are fine picks.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So let's move on. I think we're all on the same page, of course, that Netta is the best player in the house, and certainly the one I would most anticipate at this point seeing win. Dom, do you disagree with that?
As much as I would like to, I can't. I'm not really sure who else is up there at this point. Like, maybe I think it's weird because John obviously has some amount of equity, but John seemed to be very loyal to Netta, whereas I think Netta would happily cut John, you know, once he gets down to Final 3, Final 4. And so there's this imbalance there, which makes it very hard for him to actually convert a win from here. Beyond that, like, I could see some very weird timeline where somehow Sabrina and Michelle end up taking control and end up in the finals together, at which point I guess Sabrina wins by default, although if there was an option C where everyone can just leave the building, I'm pretty sure they would. but it's hard. I think Netta's certainly at the top, and beyond that, you're fighting for a distant second place.
Right. And I absolutely am on board with that. And Ian, I know you've done your draft board, as have I. And my number two, as things stand right now, Adele. Agree, disagree with that. First of all, do you have someone else at number two?
I actually do have someone else at number two, and so obviously I'm going to disagree. I am going to put John there. Like I said, it is late in the game. I think competition wins could get him to a position where he's playing to win, or you know, maybe playing to come in second to Netta as it may stand. But at the same point, the problem that I have with Adele is, from what I understand, he's not really well respected within the house as someone that you would be in the final two with, and, or, you know, someone that you would like to sit next to. I mean, I've heard Adele City thrown around, which,
no.
I mean, that's not a good thing.
No, that's a terrible thing, if Gen City is any comparison to be made, yeah. And this is something you flagged up earlier in the podcast, Ian, and it surprised me there, and it surprises me now, which is that Adele is not well-liked, because it seems like Adele, at least as he's being presented on TV, is, like, the most likable dude ever.
Right, and it's not so much that he's not well-liked, it's just that I don't think that he commands any respect from, like, a gameplay standpoint as far as what he's done. I mean, yeah, he can lock it up against, like, you know, Sabrina or Rochelle, but, you know, at the same time, I mean, I'm sure that's a possible outcome, but, I mean, just to hear that he's not respected, it just, in a must-win situation, it lowers him substantially to about four.
Okay, then the reason that I have Adele so high is because I was thinking not only could he beat Rochelle or Sabrina, but that he also has very good shots against Allison and Heather.
Against Allison, certainly. Against Heather, I'm willing to argue on that one.
Okay.
No doubt about it, especially with this Canadian vote thing. I mean, that is anybody's ballgame, and I would definitely lean towards Heather.
Oh, I would 100% lean towards Adele as far as Canada's vote, if it's Adele against Heather. I think that's a lot.
I would disagree pretty strongly on that.
If it's Adele and Heather in the final two.
Okay, here's my reasoning for that, is because I'm I don't know. I don't look at Jokeries every day. I have, you know, much better sites to look at. But as far as the charts go, and not that I don't like Jokeries, they're great for what they do. I believe Heather has been holding it down at number one for quite some time now. So I'm gonna imagine that the typical person voting for this show are the people that are going on Jokeries updates and ranking them every single day.
Okay, that's fair, and I'm certainly basing much of my analysis off of the televised episodes rather than what the internet people are saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, Dom, what are your thoughts on Adele at this point? Does he have a very solid chance to win or no?
I don't think so. I think it comes down to whether or not he can beat Heather or maybe Allison. And it goes back to this point of anyone can win if they find themselves there with Sabrina or Rochelle. It's just about getting to that point. And unless they're a very capable player who probably wouldn't need to do that in the first place, I'm not sure they can make that happen. And I certainly don't have faith in Adele to do that.
Well, the other thing that you have to understand is if you do get to, you know, with Sabrina or Rochelle, I'm going to leave Sabrina off, but I think Rochelle is probably more viable for this example. If you get there to the end and you just, like, completely, like, say you win a shitload of comps and you just fuck over the Alliance just so that you can sit next to Rochelle, like, I wouldn't be surprised to see you have a lot of problems there, especially with the set.
That's fair. Although this set, meaning this set of jury members, doesn't strike me as the type to be necessarily over bitter. Although I would have said the same thing about last season, and that certainly didn't come in.
Yeah, I mean, my expectation at this point in Big Brother is that post Big Brother 8 or post Big Brother 7, like they're going to be doing things like counting competition wins, voting for who was loyal to them in the game, who pissed them off. I mean, if you screw over a huge alliance for what could, I mean, like I said, you're pretty much banking on running the competitions and doing that. And I mean, there's not really a huge strategic game that would come from screwing over the first one and maybe even the second. So I expect that you lose some jury votes.
Okay. So I suppose I'm a bit higher on Adele than either of you two are. So let's talk a little Heather, because Ian, I know you said you had John at number two. Heather I have even above John. Is that crazy in your eyes?
Absolutely not. I actually feel that Heather is my number three and pretty much interchangeable with John. I don't see any problem with that at all. I think John is a large enough target that if things just go wrong for him even once, he is gone. And Heather has a lot of outs to win. Like I said earlier in the podcast, she was in a situation, her trying times were early, right? I mean, she was nominated, she was being punished over and over, she was on have-nots, exercise, unitard, all that shit. Mm-hmm. But she's not in those trying times, which typically means good things when you're playing from behind. She won the HOH, and she commanded a lot of respect, and she played it very well. So if she's against pretty much anybody but Netta and maybe John, I mean, lock it up. I think that's a win.
Right, and it's remarkable to me, because I remember just talking to you, Ian, off air during Ika's HOH reign, I think, which was week three, where we had Andrew and
Heather. Oh, yeah, week three.
Week three, right. Ika went out in week four, where we had Andrew and Heather is just completely drawing dead in this game. And it's preposterous to me that now with eight left, I believe, or seven or eight left, it's seven left, that Heather is in the top half of the winner rankings.
To me, yeah, she was, I wouldn't say she was drawing dead, but she was near drawing dead for me. I mean, you might have records of me typing it somewhere, but
I mean, sure do.
Okay. Well, she was very, very near she was at the bottom. Like there was no, question to me that aside from whoever was going home that week, she was at the bottom. But I mean, once she came out of that, I was like, yeah, you can just pencil her in for a long run.
Right. Well, let's talk some Heather, because I feel like I know she's Dom's girlfriend here this season, but she has really, after the first couple of weeks, really turned it on. And I'm curious if you think, was Heather like slow playing, as they say in poker, where she presents herself kind of like you did as like the dumbass for the first month?
No, I don't think that that's what was going on. I genuinely think she's just not talented. I think she's an early boot in a lot of seasons. But I think that, I think she's kind of I think she's okay, but no, that wasn't intentional. No.
No, I agree that it wasn't intentional. Although I feel like I don't disagree with you at this point that Heather is certainly in a position where she can win this game.
Oh no, there's no question. And Dom, would you like to weigh in on your BB Can GF?
Yeah, it's I said pretty much all I have to say about Heather. I think it's I don't think I'm as convinced as you are that she could beat someone like Adele. And to me, that's a pretty bad sign for her because it means you will have to, maybe betray her alliance at some point and in the process burn their jury vote. So it might be kind of counterproductive. I don't know. She's definitely going to be safe for the next few weeks. Like she might be the safest person in the house at this point. The problem is that, I can see her getting clipped in like fourth place or third place, or best case scenario might be losing the final to Neda. I'm not sure how she escapes from that prison, really.
Right. The problem for Heather at this point is it almost seems like she has to be against Allison or one of the Gremlins to win.
I mean, which is entirely possible to me. Because, like I said, I would say that, the idea of her being against the Gremlins or Allison, it's really not that far-fetched. Because, as I said earlier, if she's in that position, she went on a competition run and tanked it for the group she's currently with. It's because she just ended up there because she was sort of the last target remaining. Maybe she won something along the line, but it's not like she was, very actively against the group that she's with now in any sort of betrayal sense. Or I feel like with the others that are in that alliance, that's going to be the case. Like something had to have gone in a way where somebody screwed somebody over going into the jury. And I don't think with Heather, that's what we're going to be looking at situation-wise. And it's really not that far-fetched where to say something happens, Slabrina pulls out some random comp win, takes John out, and then Rochelle gets an endurance and then goes, well, okay. And then she ends up there with one of the Gremlins. I mean, it's hers to win.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. Anything to add about Heather before we start moving on? Because it seems like Heather is one of the less remarkable players, but certainly silently on the radar.
Agree pretty strongly on that.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into my number four pick, that being John. And the reason I have John, honestly, the reason I have John so high is the idea of he and Netta ping-ponging, as you put it, these competitions where kind of like Emmett and Jillian last year, neither of them is ever in jeopardy as long as the other one is in power.
Well, that's not necessarily true. At Final Five and even Six to some extent, things can go haywire. I think the veto is much – I think at Six is sort of like an inflection point in the game where the veto becomes almost more powerful than the HOH in some situations. And at Final Five onward, the veto is everything except for Final Three where it doesn't exist.
Right, absolutely.
So, I mean – yeah, ping-ponging is definitely something that can happen here because, I mean, I'm expecting from this point on the vast majority of competition wins to go somewhere between John and Netta. Like, I maybe Rochelle, if they get an endurance, I can see her just banking one, but otherwise, I think that that's how it's going to go, and that's where John or Netta could get into trouble, but even that doesn't seem terribly likely. I think Netta was probably sandbagging the earlier endurance, which almost seemed to be an anomaly. It seemed like an older school type of endurance comp. And if it's something where it's just like, hang on, I think Netta is perfectly capable in that type of situation. Though she can't play next week, so, we'll see.
Right, that's definitely an issue for them. Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like, how many endurance competitions can we expect to have from this point forward, if not this week where Netta can't play?
Right, exactly. I mean, it seems like at least in Big Brother US, and I'm assuming Canada last year, I believe it was the same way, where it's just there's an early one somewhere, around week three or four. Then there was like the mid-game one. In my season, I won it with the one. And then there's the last one. So that's where that's going to be from. Actually, on Heather's standpoint, I know Colin and I have talked a little bit before where if you are someone who is physically out of shape,
you're going to have a very difficult time winning any season of Big Brother based on the virtue that in order to win one of the first two heats of any HOH competition, you have to be in at least some degree of, you know, good physical shape. And I think that you only need that. Heather is in fine shape to actually win that last HOH just by that virtue. Whereas somebody like Sabrina is probably, I really need to stop saying that. Sabrina is probably drawing dead in that.
Right, and Ian, I think you didn't distinguish, the point is clear when it's being run in heats that we're talking about the final HOH competition.
Right, correct. The final HOH, I know that at least with, like, Spencer, right, from Big Brother 15, like, anytime, I think, Dom, was he your winner pick?
Probably.
He was preseason, yes, I can confirm
that. That was, like, your preseason winner pick was Spencer, correct?
Yeah,
the thing about, like, picking Spencer for me is, like, although that does seem like one of the more viable options, it's just that the chances of him winning the final HOH are slim, and the chances of anybody winning the final HOH and then taking him into a position where he's going to win the game are conceivably very slim as well. So that's why I always shy away from that particular pick. Many times, but I think that you only need to be physically fit to win the final HOH. It's really anybody's ballgame, and I think Heather is perfectly good in that front.
Yeah, sure. So I suppose let's move on now, let's talk a little Allison, because I suppose the place to start is, can Allison beat anyone but the Gremlins?
No, definitely not.
Yeah, I would say the same. I don't know if I would say definitely not as things pertain to Heather. She certainly can't beat John, Adele, or Netta. And maybe it's unfair of me to say this, but I feel like Heather, just the preconceptions that people are going to have about her, despite, you know, everyone from Arlie and henceforth being the jurors and then Canada being the juror, I certainly don't think Canada dislikes her. I don't think any of them disliked her. It's just a matter of if they respect her.
Right. And it's not even so much that. It's just for her to even get to the end. I mean, I have a very difficult time seeing any clear pathway where she's just not like a sacrificial boot somewhere along the line.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Dom, do you have anything else to add about Allison?
No, not really. She's in a bind because the people she's most likely to get jury votes from seem to be Sabrina and Rochelle, and those are the only two people that she's a lot to beat. So, you know, it's a tough circle for her to square.
How much do you think that has to do with Allison entering late?
Some of it for sure, but I think, well,
I'd say about a third, 33%.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to quantify it, and I'm not really qualified to try and put a number on it. I don't really have anything to say about that, to be honest.
So here's my thing is, I say that it plays a pretty significant part, like about a third, because as far as anybody in the house knows, she was just granted 2 free weeks of immunity. Like, they have no clue at all that she had to beat two other people to get in there. I mean, she did survive technically the same amount of boots as anybody else, but the fact that she, in their eyes, got not only 2 free weeks of game, but also a week of immunity, probably doesn't sit well with them at all.
Right. And it's very unfortunate that she can't inform any of them of that.
Right, or else she gets evicted immediately, which seems quite harsh, actually.
Right. Yeah, it does. But, I mean, I guess what else are you going to do if you don't want her to talk about it? Like, you have to have that in place.
No, I agree.
Right, okay. So I think as we kind of wrap up here on the players that are still left in the house, which of Sabrina and Rochelle do you think has a better – like, I don't think either of them, and I'd be surprised if either of you thought this, could beat anyone else apart from each other. Who do you think wins in a final two between Sabrina and Rochelle?
Rochelle by country mile.
Dom?
That's interesting. I would have assumed it would be Sabrina, but not there wouldn't be any kind of like sound basis to that. So I'm curious why you think that, Ian.
My basis on this is that when it really comes down to such, I would say not respected and low quality players, the only thing that's going to happen there is counting the competition wins. And in that scenario, I'm almost guaranteeing that Rochelle will, much to Canada's chagrin, get that jury vote. So there's one there already. And Rochelle has won. Sabrina has done pretty much fuck all the entire time.
Yeah. Well, do you think Sabrina playing so hard in the early weeks would ever serve her any kind of benefit?
No, because by playing hard in the early weeks, that has put her in the position where she's House Pariah now.
Okay. Yeah, definitely fair. And certainly Sabrina and Rochelle, in whatever order you want, are at the bottom of my draft board. Ian, which parts of the order that we went through these do you disagree? And I suppose the easier way to do this is just run down your rankings of how things stand for you as far as must-win drafts are concerned.
Okay, yeah. So I have Netta at one, very clear one. I have John at two, but in a pretty swappable position with number three, Heather. I have a large jump down from there with Adele and then Allison. And then after that, it's Rochelle and Sabrina pretty much in their own tier, far, far, far below anybody else. But I would say pretty close together, but with Rochelle having an edge.
Okay, definitely fair.
But by saying that, I would firmly believe Rochelle would likely win that, but I'm not saying, like, bank it by any means. I think it's Rochelle by a country mile, but it's certainly not a sure thing, and that I would put them in separate tiers.
Right. As someone who has, in our Big Brother draft, both of the Gremlins, I don't care which of them wins it, as long as, like, they both have to get there against each other for either of them to have a chance. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Okay, so Ian, something that we always talk about that we definitely want to hear your thoughts about, and we'll certainly be contributing ourselves, are thoughts on Arissa Cox as a host. And I know you, as well as plenty of people listening, are used to Julie Chen.
Yeah, you know, I've sampled, you know, international versions. I've seen Julie Chen, obviously, more than any of the other ones, for sure. You know, I think Arissa is definitely someone that, as a host, an interesting choice. I think Dom pretty much hit the nail on the head where there is the very dramatic, you know, letter scene with Ika, and then, you know, it pulls out and it's like, oh, what'd you think about that, guys? Like, we really don't need that. Like, I think it does speak for itself.
OMG!
Yeah. You know, I guess she's just fine. Okay, I mean, as far as all the hosts I've seen, I've never actually watched a full season of any other foreign version, but I've seen clips. I did like, they had this, I don't even know his name, it was this fat guy that hosted Big Brother Australian version several years ago. I think it was 2008. And I mean, for my money, whenever the audience gets loud yelling, shut up, pigs, it really perfectly suits the show.
All right, and my thoughts are, you know, as Arissa gets more and more comfortable, I feel like she's almost, and I hate to say this, because there's nothing I want more than to like Arissa, but I feel like the more comfortable she gets in her position as host, the more informal and, by extension, worse she gets as the host. And I'm sure Dom, with his British sensibilities, is on roughly the same page.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not insisting upon them replacing Arissa by any means, but I wish she would be a bit more impartial and less gossipy, I suppose, is the way to put it.
I agree. Yeah, I very much agree on that. I having you international ones, whoever the British woman that was doing it for a while, I think was pretty gossipy, but like in a way that I like kind of enjoyed. Whereas Arissa, it seems like she's trying to toe the line, but it's very clear that that's not what's happening.
Yeah, on the British version, it's very much like a celebrity gossip show nowadays. So right. I think Davina McCall is who you're referring to.
Not the current one, but the one before the current lady.
Okay, I wouldn't know who that is nowadays, but yeah.
I think it's Davina, yeah.
That kind of hosting style is much better suited to that kind of show, I think.
I would agree. I've seen like an interview or something. She was... It was fun. I enjoyed it, but not enough that I would sit down and watch it just based on the premise. But, like, I liked what she did with it.
Yeah, so I suppose anything that we forgot to get to as things pertain to Big Brother Canada?
Not that I really can think of. I mean, to just put a wrap on maybe, like, the winner ranking thing, I think Netta is clearly the most capable and best player of this set, and I really hope to see her win. Alternatively, I think John is a pretty viable pick. He has to play what I would call like a Crash Bandicoot game where there's just like constant peril at every turn, but you know, you somehow get through it. So I can see that happening. But I think those, for me, are my top two picks. I could see Heather eking out a win, but that's really where I'm expecting this to go.
Okay, I would certainly include Adele in that mix. Certainly plenty left that remains to be seen. Ian, before we let you get out of here, though, certainly, you know, we talked to you after, as we always do, the premiere of Survivor this season. I certainly want to hear your thoughts on this crazy season so far.
You know, it's actually a very good season. This is, it's exciting. It's kind of got this, like, old school feel with a new twist to it, and I definitely am enjoying it thoroughly. You know, I think I was a little worried after the first episode. I think we lost two really great characters, but, I mean, it's been bringing it. I've definitely enjoyed the way it's been going. I think, you know, I really like Spencer. I think he's done some pretty good things for the game, for his game anyway, not necessarily the game as a whole. But I'm very interested in watching what he pulls out of his hat next. And, I mean, geez, this cast lady, wow.
Yeah. Pretty bad. Sure, yeah. Is Spencer your winner pick, or is it someone else, or who do you got?
I mean, with LJ going, I mean, it pretty much leaves Spencer in the clear, at least in my mind, to be the one who ships this thing. But, I mean, I've heard rumblings of Tasha, but for now, I'm quite firmly on the Spencer pick, but we could go, I'd have been on the LJ train, so.
Yeah, certainly. One of the three of us went out pretty hard on the LJ train. Dom, anything else to get to before we get out of here today?
Yeah, I think that's a good note to leave it on.
Yeah, well, thank you guys very much for listening. We will talk to you very soon as we resume our Survivor coverage next week. Thank you, Ian, for taking so much time.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course, you can follow him on Twitter at Tulane Terry. You can follow us at Colin Stone and at MC_Usher. Subscribe on iTunes if you liked what you heard. Leave us a rating if you're so inclined, and we will be back very soon. Take care, everybody.